The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So sometimes it's said that the Dharma is full of paradox, right? It's like the Dharma can't be captured, it's ineffable, like Jack Kerouac, I think, said, I saw a quote, like, when you, not that Jack Kerouac is the point person for Dharma, all Dharma, but he said, when you get to the top of the mountain, keep climbing, yeah? It's like, and a lot of Dharma can sound like that, yeah? And so there are these seeming paradoxes of that animate a lot of the Dharma, like, okay, what's, you know, there's questions about, like, letting go, allowing, and yet attainment, achievement, like, maturing, developing. There are questions about effort, energetic vigor, you know, virya, and non-doing, right? And maybe seeming paradox. There's all this talk about self and not self, right? There's the kind of cultivation of kindness, of self-care, self-love, self-compassion, cultivating qualities, characteristics of the mind. And yet there's this, like, you know, very hallowed zone or honored kind of series of insights around the emptiness of self. And in the context of these seeming maybe paradoxes, sometimes Dharma teachers are, we sort of like wind up invoking different ways of acknowledging paradox. So like the relative and the absolute, like we've actually created vaguely two parallel universes to try to explain some of the paradoxes in the teaching. But the truth is that there's only one world. And my feeling is that a lot of what appears to be paradox are just failures of precision around the path, which is a little maybe arrogant to say or something, but that I think a lot of the apparent paradoxes actually resolve not always through some like mystical experience where these two worlds unite or something, but it's actually mistakes in our thinking that lead us to imagine paradox and to invoke it. So I say this as a prelude to an op-ed that I saw in the New York Times a few days ago from a philosophy professor at MIT. I don't know how they pronounce their name, but Kiran Satya, maybe. So here's what they wrote. Inspiring as it seems on first inspection, the self-help slogan, live in the present, slips rapidly out of focus. What would living in the present mean? To live each day as if it were your last without a thought for the future is simply bad advice, a recipe for recklessness. The idea that one can make oneself invulnerable to what happens by detaching from everything but the present is an irresponsible delusion. Despite this, there is an interpretation of living in the present, inspired by Aristotle, that can help us confront the present crisis and the perpetual crises of struggle and failure in life. We engage in all sorts of activities, reading an article, reflecting on life, attending a protest, preparing a report, listening to music, driving home, making dinner, spending time with loved ones. Though all of these activities take time, there's a crucial difference in how they relate to the present moment. Using terminology from linguistics, we can distinguish activities of two fundamental kinds. Telic activities, from telos, the Greek word for purpose, aim at terminal states by which they are completed. Think of reading this article or driving home from work. Once you arrive at the goal, you're finished. The point of the activity has been achieved. Not all activities are like this. Some activities are atelic. They do not aim at terminal states. However much you reflect on life or spend time with family, you cannot complete these activities. As Aristotle wrote, if you are learning, you have not at the same time learned. When you care about telic activities, projects like writing a report, getting married, or making dinner, it is yet to be achieved and then it's gone. Telic activities are exhaustible. In valuing and pursuing these activities, we aim to complete them and so to expel them from our lives. Atelic activities, by contrast, do not by nature come to an end and are not incomplete. In defining such activities, we could emphasize the fact that they do not aim at final states, terminal states. But we could also emphasize what Aristotle does. They are fully realized in the present. At the same time, quote, at the same time, one is seeing and has seen, is understanding and has understood, is thinking and has thought. There's nothing you need to do in order to perform an atelic activity except what you're doing right now. If what you care about is reflecting on your life or spending time with loved ones, and that is what you're doing, you are not on the way to achieving your end. You are already there. To live in the present is not to deny the value of telic or purposeful activities, of making a difference in the world. That would be a terrible mistake. But if projects are all we value, our lives become self-subversive. So I get into this like thorny terrain, not to be do amateur philosophy, which I'm not qualified to do, but because I feel like what's being pointed to is helpful in understanding our practice. That it's not a paradox that some things we do and need to get done and some things are never done. Yeah. And it's also true that we can pay deep attention. We can be mindful when we're doing things that need to get done. It's not that we can't be mindful of like telic activities, driving home. Yeah. But what is on offer with the atelic activities, those things that are never complete, reflecting on one's life, being listening to a loved one, yeah, is that the only action there is in the present. There's nothing getting done. there's no end state to any of that. Now, an important question that is not asked in the article, but it arose in my mind is meditation telic or atelic? Yeah? Different traditions might, I don't know, you know, different traditions might say different things, like Suzuki Roshi at Soto Zen, Shikantaza, like they might say just Buddha now, you know, just sit. You're not getting or going anywhere, yeah? So Suzuki Roshi said, like, as long as you think I'm doing this, or I have to do this, or I might attain something special, you're actually not doing anything. When you do not try to do anything special, then you're doing something. Yeah. Right? And then you have the insight tradition, which is maybe more on the telic side, the way we talk about, like, jhana and or samadhi, insight, progress of insight, nibbana, awakening, you know, all of these things, like it's framed in a more telic way, yeah? But I think whether we frame meditation as atelic or telic, what we actually do, how we actually rest with the moment, is very much atelic. Yeah. Whatever we may get from our practice, whatever beauty or goodness or love that is the fruit of silence, as Gil often says, like the way we get there is really to be here. As if there's nowhere else to go, nothing else to have, to own. So, I don't know how this connects to the work period we're about to do.